What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT. I know it's late. I didn't mean to go live this late, but I had a lot of things I had to do pertaining to school. I had a final presentation that I had to get done. I had a couple of final midterm assignments that I had to turn in. So I apologize for the fact that I'm live streaming so late, but from this point forward, we should be going back to our regular scheduled live streaming times, which is 9:15 Eastern time on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. We're going to be on spring break. We've caught up with all our work. So we have nothing but time on our hands to produce good content for you guys. And we got a lot of it tonight. Going to be giving you guys my thoughts on Coach Prime Season 2, the documentary series on Amazon, which followed Deion Sanders' first season at Colorado. The Patriots' plans at quarterback have been leaked. Now, according to some reports out there, there are a lot of rumors going out there that the Patriots already have decided how they're going to approach addressing the quarterback position. What college football teams are on the rise in 2024? I got a few teams that you guys need to look out for who could have breakthrough seasons. USC, on the other hand, is coming off a disappointing season in 2023, but I have a strong suspicion that they're going to be fine. They're going to bounce back going into their third year under Lincoln Riley. I'm going to give you reasons why. Miami football has been down ever since I came out the womb as a diehard Hurricanes fan. The only year I remember Miami actually getting a lot of attention was in 2017. But outside of that, the program has been irrelevant. But could this season be the year the U is back? And then three biggest needs for every team in the AFC North. We're also going to touch on the Miami Dolphins trying to get a long-term extension done with Tua Tagovailoa. I don't think that's a great idea. And is there still reasons to believe in Bryce Young? Before we start, leave a like, subscribe. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel. We are a podcast. You can find us on all podcasting platforms: Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. If you have a question that you would like answered on a future episode, you can send them in the DMs on Instagram at JT Sports_, or on Twitter or X at JT Sports_. Every question that you guys DM us, we will try to answer on the show. And before we start, here's a quick word from our partner, Mint Mobile. Does it piss you off how much you pay for your monthly phone bill? Why are you getting frustrated when our partner Mint Mobile has plans as low as $15 a month that give you unlimited talk and text on the nation's largest 5G network? Stop getting frustrated with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in the description and pinned comment down below to get access to premium wireless for only $15 a month. That's only $15 a month. Switching to Mint is easy, and it only takes 15 minutes to do. If you're pissed off with how much you pay for your monthly phone bill, switch to Mint Mobile today and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in the description and pinned comment down below to get premium wireless for only $15 a month. Stop getting upset with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and switch to Mint Mobile today. Does it piss you? We got some insight on the direction that the Patriots want to take when it comes to addressing the quarterback position. Jeff Howe of The Athletic reported that there's a strong sense the Patriots are leaning towards using that third overall selection in this year's draft to take a quarterback. Most likely it's either going to be Drake May or Jaden Daniels. And then they're probably not going to start neither one of those guys day one. It also has been reported that they're looking towards bringing in a veteran to have him start. And then eventually, somewhere along the season, you can insert the rookie. Rather that be Jaden Daniels or Drake May. Now, who should they take with the third overall selection? That's what's really interesting. I think that's a big question that a lot of us want to know the answer to. And for right now, it seems as if Drake May is most likely going to be the selection. Washington has Cliff Kingsbury as their offensive coordinator. He's somebody who runs a spread scheme, so he likes to have a mobile quarterback, a dual threat back there underneath center, and that's what Jaden Daniels is going to give them. Drake May, he's a dual threat QB as well. Not as good as a runner as Jaden Daniels, but he has a lot of similarities in his playing style to Josh Allen. That's my nickname for him. I call him Baby Josh Allen. If the Patriots had to pick between the two, I still believe they would go with Drake May. When you're playing up north, you normally want somebody who is big, strong, with a very good arm, and that's what Drake May gives them. Not saying that Jaden Daniels wouldn't be able to be good if he got drafted by New England, but it just seems as if Drake May has started to slip below Jaden Daniels in a lot of people's QB evaluations. So I'm expecting Jaden Daniels to be the second quarterback taken off the board. And at third, you're probably going to land Drake May if you're New England. And if you're a Patriots fan, you should be really happy if you're able to get a guy like Drake May. I think that he's been a little bit overly criticized at the start of this draft process. I get that he started the season this past year at North Carolina really strong, but then during the middle portion of the year and the later half of the year, he started being really inconsistent, had some really heavy turnover games, some questionable decision making, but the potential definitely is there for him to be one of the best quarterbacks in the game. You got a pretty good staff in place, and it's not like he doesn't have the potential to be an elite quarterback. So you wouldn't be settling. And I don't think Drake May is as bad as what a lot of people make him out to be. This definitely is somebody who, if I was the Patriots and I was Gerard Mayo, I would take with that third overall selection and be satisfied with it. Now, in terms of who you're going to bring in to be your veteran quarterback to mentor whoever you take at three, I think a good pickup would be Jameis Winston. He's not going to have a big market. There are going to be teams that are going to be interested in his services, but maybe only around three or four. You're not going to have to pay a lot of money to him. Maybe you can get away with giving him a cheap 4 or 5 year deal for 1 year, or maybe you give him a 2 year deal for $8 million. But Jameis Winston, you know that with him at the helm at quarterback, he isn't going to be good enough where he'll probably have you in playoff contention, but he'll be serviceable for you. You'll have a efficient offense. Well, I won't say efficient, but you have an offense that at least would be able to move the ball down the field and be a lot better than what you got out of that side of the ball last year in 2023. The turnovers are going to be an issue with Jameis Winston, and when he starts having those turnover heavy games, that's when you can just bench him and put in either Jaden Daniels or Drake May. But Jameis Winston would be a really good option for a team like New England. Good bridge quarterback. You don't have to pay him a lot of money. Or you could go the route of maybe bringing in Marcus Mariota, who you could get for even cheaper, or Sam Darnold. He's going to be available. But ideally, your veteran quarterback is only a temporary fix for you until your younger guy is ready to go. And I think that Jameis Winston probably would be the best option for New England if they're looking to find a quarterback who they can get at a good value. So New England, with this third overall selection, also could trade down. And I've seen this theory thrown out by a lot of Patriots fans that trading down from three, getting more draft picks also is a possibility. And I do think that if you aren't happy with whoever is on the board at three and one of your guys gets taken, you're not a fan of Drake May or you don't like Jaden Daniels, then you probably trade down, get more picks. Maybe you just try to tank for Shedeur Sanders next season. But I just think New England, in the situation that they're in right now, they have to take a quarterback. Everybody thinks that building up your team first is important, and that definitely is, but you don't have the luxury of picking this high in the draft every single year. At least that's not what you will hope for if you want Jerod Mayo to work out, because if you're picking in the same spot or around the same spot next year around this time, that means that he didn't do that good of a job and there still is a lot of work to be done and the jury is still out on him. Ideally, when you have the opportunity to get a franchise quarterback, you go ahead and you take it. You just don't pass up on potentially franchise-changing quarterbacks just to draft the receiver like Marvin Harrison Jr. or try to get a good value later on in the draft. There's a reason why the majority of the NFL's best quarterbacks go the furthest in the postseason. If you have an elite quarterback, you increase your chances of being able to win a Super Bowl. You saw what Patrick Mahomes just did. Every team in the league, their standard at quarterback should be Mahomes. Because if not, then you're at a significant disadvantage when it comes to you trying to win. You may not need to have the next Mahomes, but you need to have a quarterback that's as good or in the same realm as him from a talent standpoint, like Lamar, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and New England. Just passing up on a quarterback at three this season would be a massive disappointment, because next year's quarterback class isn't that deep, is not going to be that great, and you may not have the chance of walking away with a game-changing quarterback for maybe the next 3-4 years. You don't know how many other good prospects are going to come out from here to then. So just go ahead and find your guy now while you have the opportunity to, versus trying to wait later. So you guys leave your thoughts in the comment section about what you think the Patriots should do or what you think they will do with the third overall selection, because I truthfully think that quarterback is the only route for them to go. I would love to see Jaden Daniels go there, but maybe the Washington Commanders trade down with somebody and a team like the Raiders jumps up and takes Jaden at number two. But either way, no matter who is on the board when it's your turn to pick, you're still going to walk away with a quarterback that's going to be really good. Rather it be Jaden Daniels or Drake May, I don't think you can go wrong with either or. Last night, I finished watching the full season of Coach Prime, season 2 on Amazon Prime. And this was a well-done docuseries because it perfectly captured everything about Deion Sanders and the hype that this Colorado football program had last season. It perfectly captured the highs when they started out 4-0, and then the lows when they lost the remainder of their games after. And if you want a good look at the Deion Sanders experience, you have to tune into this, because not only are you going to get a good understanding of what Deion Sanders is trying to build at Boulder, but you also get a look behind the scenes of how the interactions between Coach Prime and his players went and the coaches. You're going to get a better understanding of just college football in general, because after watching this, I realized that college football is just so different now in today's era of the transfer portal and the NIL than what it was a decade ago when I first became a fan of the sport. And that's my first takeaway. You know, watching this, I was thinking to myself, bro, they're running this football program like it's the NFL. There was one situation when you had a player personnel guy. He's pretty much like the general manager of Colorado. And they were discussing advanced scouting, who they were looking at in the portal to bring in for next season. And they were talking about building this team to make a big run this year. And I was thinking to myself, it's 4 games left in the season. Why the hell are we talking about the transfer portal and next year when there's still one more month of ball to be played? And just the way they go about talking about how players can be replaced, they don't hold back from saying that you can be replaced. All we got to do is go get somebody better than you in the portal. And it's not just Colorado that is doing this. It's all of college football. I'm just happy that we get to see how these things transpire behind the scenes with this docuseries, because There was a game where Shedeur Sanders got injured. I believe it was UCLA. And right after, Coach Prime wasn't happy. And then they had a team meeting, and he called out one of his offensive linemen, who was a freshman offensive tackle, and he was berating him, saying, "Why are you not starting? Tell the team why you're not starting. Tell the team why you can't start. You can't take one of these guys' spots. You see those guys playing every week? You don't think you're better than them? Why aren't you out there?" And that gets me to my next point. After watching this, I don't think Deion Sanders knows how to take losing or taking failure. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. When you're somebody who doesn't know how to deal with losing, you're willing to do everything that it takes to win. But that also comes at a price, because sometimes you may go a little bit overboard. There was a situation where Deion Sanders basically is telling guys that we're already in the transfer portal looking for your replacements, and that was to his offensive line. I don't think that's the best way to go about trying to inspire and encourage your players to perform better. If you want your players to play better during the season, motivating them by saying they're going to get replaced isn't going to get it done. You have to coach them up. You have to change the scheme. You have to do different things to put them in a better position where they can block longer for Shedeur. And Deion Sanders, just the way he called out his offensive line at times this season, just didn't sit right with me. And I kind of was a little bit disappointed, because I expected a little bit better. And he is old school. You know, those old school coaches, they're really harsh. They don't hold back from the truth, and they're going to tell you what it is in front of anybody. But you can lose your locker room that way. Now, I think what does buy Deion Sanders a little bit of leeway with the players in terms of how he goes about trying to call them out is that he does have their best interest at heart. He truthfully wants to see all his players not just succeed on the field, but succeed off the field as great men. But to do that, it requires a certain amount of discipline that you have to give your players at times when they do the wrong things, or when they're not playing up to expectations, or they're leaving plays on the field. But there's a way to go about it that I just don't think Deion Sanders went about it the right way. And when the team started out hot, he did a really good job of managing the hype until the hype just became too much and players just couldn't do anything but just see good things being said about themselves every time they went on social media, and they got complacent. And when they started losing, when you listen to the interviews that they were doing with the different coaches, the people who were working for the program, and even some of the players, they were saying, yeah, like, we got to get more focus. We got to lock in. So Deion Sanders, if you look at what went wrong after that hot start, it was the fact that these players didn't know how to handle success. And Deion Sanders, you know, he didn't know how to make sure he could keep his players centered enough to keep on winning games. And when things went left, Deion Sanders, you know, he started calling out his guys, and you just want to see more accountability from the coaching staff. And after the games, he takes accountability, you feel me? But in the team meetings and whatnot, I've never heard anything about adjustments they need to make. And when he decided to make the change at offensive coordinator, going from Sean Lewis to, what was his name? I can't even think of his name right now. I know he used to coach for the Denver Broncos, Pat Shurmur. So he goes from his previous offensive coordinator, and then he goes to a guy who hasn't really called plays at a high level at all. Pat Shurmur, he does have an NFL background, but it's not like Sean Lewis was doing such a bad job where he had to get replaced. The offense didn't really have any improvement. The reasoning that Coach Prime gave for making the change from Sean Lewis to Pat Shurmur as the play caller on offense was that they just needed to do something differently, because Shedeur was getting hurt too much, And even though, like, Shedeur Sanders was playing through these injuries and you might not have thought he was hurt, like, he was pretty much injured for the entirety of the year. And the offensive line was so bad that Sean Lewis, there was something in his play calling that was making the problem even worse in Deion Sanders' eyes, and that's why he had to replace him. But Sean Lewis, in hindsight, wasn't really that big of the problem. He's a head coach for a reason. If he was that bad of a play caller, he wouldn't have been hired by San Diego State. So I don't really agree with how Deion Sanders went about handling losing. But I do get a better understanding of what Deion Sanders wants from his players. And all he wants is for them to give it their all. He wants them to be accountable. He wants them to be professionals. All right, if he tells you team meeting at 8:15 a.m., he wants you there at 8 o'clock. All right, he wants you to be disciplined. He wants you to know what you have to do. He wants you to be prepared. And he wants you to be dedicated to the books. He wants you to be a dedicated person to whatever you want to strive to become. And you can obviously feel the love and passion that Deion Sanders has for coaching and why he loves it. He doesn't love it for the fame and the camera. He loves it because he really enjoys the process of trying to help these young men become better players and better people, because he enjoys the process of seeing growth. And that's what's the beauty of coaching the Coach Prime. Seeing the growth of young men going from, you know, 18 years old out of high school, 21 years old, being first round picks in the NFL. So Deion Sanders, if anybody ever questions, you know, how much Deion Sanders cares about his players, he always cares about his players. Now, there is such a thing called tough love, and he may talk to his players in ways that we may not all agree with. But he does have their best interests at heart. But at the same time, you got to remember that college football now is a business. All right, these coaches now are going to be no holds barred if you're not executing on the field. And they're not going to hesitate to tell you to move on and go find somewhere else to play at. Players that really stood out to me in this documentary, definitely Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders carried Colorado on his back last season. Travis Hunter made a lot of big plays. He had a really big interception against TCU. He made a lot of big moments that made you go, wow, like Travis Hunter is probably the best player in college football. But if you think about who's the heart and soul of Colorado right now, it's Shedeur. No matter what the odds were, no matter if they were down by 30 or down by a touchdown, they always had faith that Shedeur Sanders was going to be able to come through and find a way to get them the victory. And even when things were going left, Shedeur Sanders was the only constant. And imagine how good he could have been this year if he would have had just an average offensive line. He possibly could have won a Heisman Trophy. He could have put up like 50 touchdowns. It's going to be insane to think how good Shedeur is going to be in 2024 now that Deion Sanders and the Buffs have revamped the offensive line. But he was getting beat up, man. But he was still fighting it out. He was still playing despite having all kinds of crazy injuries. And it's just the more he played, the more beat down he got throughout the season. And that also was part of the reasoning why Coach Prime came at some of his offensive linemen the way that he did, because he also had his son there. But Shedeur Sanders, no matter what happened, no matter how bad things started to get, he never threw anybody under the bus. He always accepted responsibility, saying he needs to do better, always trying to bring up his teammates. And throughout the season, it was a narrative that people kept throwing out there on social media that his teammates don't like him. Some are jealous of him. Some feel like he showboats too much. Never seen any of that throughout this documentary. And they didn't edit anything out. They didn't alter it. This is as authentic as you get when it comes to documentaries that follow teams throughout the season. Everything was raw, uncut, and authentic. and all these players, they love Shedeur Sanders. They rally behind this dude. This is their leader. Travis Hunter is a dog. He's also a leader too. But the heart and soul, the heartbeat of this team is Shedeur, because when he got injured and he wasn't able to play, this team looked like arguably the worst team in college football last season. So it just shows you how much importance Shedeur has to not just this program, but just to his teammates. You know, they love this dude. So Shedeur Sanders having this cool, calm mentality definitely helped Colorado at least win the few games that they did. Because if they didn't have him, they probably would have went winless. Maybe they went one or two games max, but I just don't know, because Shedeur Sanders, he made so many big plays for Colorado this year, like against Colorado State, when he led them to bring the game to overtime, then eventually got them to win in OT. There were just a lot of moments that Shedeur put that Superman cape on, and he said, don't worry about it. I'm here. We're going to win. I'm going to make sure we do it. I also loved Travis Hunter, Jimmy Horn Jr. Jimmy Horn Jr. probably was my favorite person to listen to throughout the documentary. I love the relationship, the bond that he has with his dad. I love his story, his upbringing. You know, he didn't come from the best situations. And when you come from those kinds of situations, it makes you appreciate what you have more. It makes you want to grind harder. And you can definitely see that with Jimmy Horn. And I think that's a really big reason why him and Coach Prime had such a good relationship. And as much as they were showcasing Shedeur Sanders, we were seeing more of him than anybody else. And we didn't really see a lot of Shiloh. You know, I would have loved to see more Shiloh. I don't know how people pronounce it, but I would have loved to see more of him. We only really just saw Shedeur. We didn't really get to see a lot of camera time with Deion's other son on the team. And he was a really big part of the defense. He was pretty much their second best player. But these are my takeaways from season 2 of Coach Prime on Amazon. If you haven't seen it, go ahead and check it out. It's available on Amazon Prime. If you already have Amazon Prime, then you can watch this for free. You don't have to pay anything for it. And it was a really good, well done docuseries that perfectly encaptured, you know, what the Deion Sanders experience was at Colorado. The good and the bad. Before we move on, I got to change something with the lighting real quick. And we got a lot more that we got to talk about. We got to talk about college football teams that are on the rise. Will USC be able to bounce back? Is this a resurgence year for the Miami Hurricanes? If you're tuned in on the live chat, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. What college football teams are on the rise in 2024? Well, let's start off with the team that just won the American Athletic Conference, SMU. They won 11 games last season, year two under Rhett Lashley. And before the season started, I was telling everybody that SMU was really underrated. They have a really good NIL back in. They have hit the transfer portal pretty hard. They're really good at using the portal. That's how they assemble the majority of their roster. They're not really that good recruiting yet, but the recruiting should pick up with them making the transition to the ACC. And they're in a really good spot right now, because the ACC isn't bad where SMU isn't really going to benefit from joining that conference, but it's also good enough to the point where they probably aren't going to go in year one and set it on fire, but they also potentially could go in year one and win 8-9 games, which I think would start to get a lot of people's attention. And Rhett Lashley, he's somebody that's going to be a hot candidate for any of the big head coaching jobs that open up at the end of this year. I thought that he was going to get interviewed for the Texas A&M job, but it wasn't really a lot of traction with that. His first season at SMU, 7 wins. Last year, only 2 losses, 11 wins. So or three losses, excuse me, 11 wins. So they went 11-3 in his second season. And year three, you got Preston Stone coming back. He is coming off a concerning injury, but you got a lot of talent. You're utilizing the transfer portal pretty well, and the recruiting should pick up. So SMU is definitely a team that is on the up and up in 2024. And if you remember anything about this program back in their glory days, back in the 70s and 80s when it was illegal to pay players, this was a damn good team. And imagine what they can do now that everything that they got in trouble for in the past is now legal to do. So in the ACC, this could be the catapult to SMU getting back to being a powerhouse nationally. Missouri is one of those programs that people think is going to come back down to earth this year because last year was one of those Cinderella seasons. You know, every single year in college football, we have a team that nobody expects to be that good. They've been coming off a couple of down years, and all of a sudden, they end up being one of the best teams in college football. They win the New Year's Six Bowl game, and everybody's wondering if they can sustain their success next season. Missouri isn't one of those teams. They're not one of those Cinderella stories that they're only good for one season. Next year, they come back and they're garbage. If you look at what Eli Drinkwitz has done in his first couple of years in Missouri, he's completely transformed this program. All right, they are recruiting at a level that we haven't seen them recruit at in a while. They are pretty much getting the majority of the best players coming out of the state. And you wouldn't really consider Missouri to be a state that's talent rich when it comes to high school football, but they have gotten two of the last couple of number one players to come out of the state of Missouri, Luther Burden, and they just got the sixth best defensive end, who is also number one ranked player in the state. And overall, their recruiting efforts have been pretty good. They signed the 21st ranked recruiting class this offseason. And back in 2023, their recruiting class ranked 34th. They also utilized the transfer portal well. They got the 13th best transfer portal class coming into this year. And last year, they were pretty good at utilizing the portal as well. And based on what they have coming back on offense, Brady Cook, Luther Burden, you got an experienced offensive line. This could be a top three offense, top five offense in the Southeastern Conference this season. Defensively, they got a lot of experience that departed for the NFL, and they also lost their defensive coordinator to LSU. But Eli Drinkwitz has a really good eye for good coaches. He has one of the best staffs in America. Missouri, they got a lot of momentum right now. They may not win 11 games this season, but they still should be a 9-10 win team this season. I don't think that this program is riding off the coattails of a Cinderella story year. This is a program that they're here to stay, and they're for real, and they're getting a lot of momentum in recruiting, and they're utilizing NIL, so look out for Missouri, man. If you think that Missouri's in for a fall off, they're going to surprise you. Miami is also another team that's going to surprise people this year because they've been down for a very long time. The only time Miami has been relevant in the past 10 years was when they went to the Orange Bowl and got whacked by Wisconsin under Mark Richt, and they had Malik Rozier, and that's when they really made the turnover chain a big national thing. But outside of that, you got to go all the way back to the early 2000s when people were actually talking about Miami on a national level. But 2024 might be the season that the Hurricanes have a slight resurgence. Are they going to be able to win a national championship? No. But they definitely are on pace to compete for the ACC title and possibly make it into the new expanded college football playoffs. All right. They have brought in a top 10 and top 5 recruiting class their first 2 years under Mario Cristobal. And we know that Mario Cristobal is one of the best recruiters in college football. the question with him is, you know that you got a good team. Are you going to be able to maximize the amount of talent that you have? That's going to be key for Miami this season. You got Cam Ward. You have experienced offense. You got a really good offensive coordinator. Miami, year one under Mario Cristobal, 5 wins. This past season, 7 wins. Yeah, it may be 2 more wins, but if you think back to that Georgia Tech game and a couple of other close losses that they had, this easily could have been a year last season where they could have found themselves maybe winning 8-9 games possibly. So I think that Miami is on a really good trajectory. It seems like 2024 has been the year that everybody in that organization has had circled. And I think that this is going to be a very big season for the Miami Hurricanes in terms of what we see them do on the field and how they're going to fare in the ACC now that FSU is back and Clemson looks like they're trying to make a comeback also. Nebraska football has been down since I first got into watching college football. All right, they've been irrelevant. This program is pretty much at the bottom of the bottom. But there was a lot of things that Matt Rhule showed in his first season as the head coach for the Cornhuskers that gives me a lot of optimism about the direction that Nebraska's heading in under Coach Rhule. You know, they got a big-time quarterback recruit and Dylan Raiola, who is the second-best quarterback coming out of this past year's recruiting cycle. And if he develops and he reaches his potential, then Nebraska football, not only are they going to go from being irrelevant to relevant again, but they easily could contend for the Big Ten. When you have a quarterback that has the kind of talent and potential of Dylan Raiola, if he reaches that, he's one of those kinds of recruits that can change your program around. He can help resurrect Nebraska or help be part of the resurrection of Nebraska football. They also have recruited pretty decently. You know, they are bringing in 2 top 25 classes consecutively under Matt Rhule. And last year, yeah, they didn't make it to a bowl game. They went 5-7. But if a couple of those one possession games would have went their way, they could have easily been a 7-win team. And we are looking at them a lot differently going into this season than what we are, you know, right now, with the fact that they're coming off a 5-7 record. But even then, 6 of the losses were one possession games. So if you are in one possession games in year one under Matt Rhule, imagine how many close games you're going to be able to win this season now that you're going to have a better team that's going to be a little bit more experienced. Now, Matt Rhule still wants to build this team mostly through recruiting, but the transfer portal, if there's a couple of players here or there that could help be a quick fix to a position of need, they're going to go ahead and grab them and address those positions. But Nebraska, you got Dylan Raiola, you got a pretty good coaching staff, you're recruiting excellent. I think that Nebraska football, they're going to be back sooner rather than later. And eventually, Matt Rhule should have Nebraska football at least competing for a Big Ten championship spot. Because I definitely do believe that with the ascension that this program is making in terms of utilizing the portal and recruiting and how well they are recruiting right now, the trajectory definitely has to be really promising. Colorado, you know, the Deion Sanders experiment in 2024 is going to either be a big success or it's going to be a massive failure. And this is the year that they've been planning for, because last season they had high expectations in terms of, you know, wanting to win more than what they did previously before Coach Prime did. And that definitely they were able to achieve. But they felt like they could have done a little bit more. But this season, though, now that you have a year under your belt, you're bringing in more recruits and transfers that fit your philosophy of how you want to run your football program, this is the year where Colorado, if you thought that the hype was high for them when they started out 4-0. You haven't seen anything yet because the hype train is going to be, it is going to be full, and that thing is going to be packed. And they're going to be good this year because they got Shedeur Sanders and they are improving the offensive line. There's no reason why they shouldn't be anything less than a 7-win team at minimum. When you think about them making the transition from the Pac-12 to the Big 12, the gap between them and everybody else, there isn't one at all. You know, it's pretty much Utah, Kansas State, maybe Oklahoma State, and then everybody else is on an even playing field. So Colorado, they aren't recruiting at a high level, but that's only because Deion Sanders' mentality is, why would I just go after high school guys when I'm trying to win as quickly as possible right now? And the best way to do that is by just utilizing the transfer portal. He's running Colorado like a football program. You know, they're treating the transfer portal like it's free agency. So Colorado, 2024 is the year that they had circled when they first arrived to Boulder last year. Last year, they pretty much knew that they weren't going to be that great, but they were just going to try to put something together. And they did the best job they could. But this season, this is really where you should see Colorado looking like the team that Deion Sanders wants. Auburn. You know, Auburn, for some reason, you know, they are one of those programs that they have a lot of potential. It's just that it's so hard to win at Auburn because of the disadvantage that you have going up against some of the sport's best teams every single year, having to recruit against Alabama. But now that Nick Saban's gone, you know, things should be a little bit more easier for Hugh Freeze because he is a better recruiter than what Kalen DeBoer is. And we've seen that on full display because in his first full-time year being the head coach at Auburn, they had the 10th best recruiting class. They also did a really good job in the transfer portal last year. A lot of those guys that they got out of the portal are still there. There's a lot of potential. All they need is development. Can Hugh Freeze help those young players that he got out of the portal reach the next level? Defensively, they have a couple of holes they got to fill because they lost some veterans to the NFL. But offensively, this should be a pretty good offense. This should be a pretty decent team. We know that Hugh Freeze is a really good offensive-minded coach. What he does from a schematic standpoint is really impressive. But overall, if Auburn wants to be able to take that next step, which they won 6 games last year, you want to get the 8-9 wins this year, you need better quarterback play out of Peyton Thorne. He's not that great, but Hugh Freeze, with him being in his second season under him, he should make a little bit of improvement, good enough where Auburn could find themselves in the middle of the pack of the SEC versus being a little bit down on the bottom of the ladder. So these are my 6 college football teams that are on the rise in 2024. Give your thoughts about some teams that you believe are on the rise. List some that you disagree with. I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say about this list. It took me a very long time to make. Could 2024 be the year we see the resurrection of Miami football? As a lifelong Miami Hurricanes fan, I've been only around to see the Hurricanes have one great season. And that was the year when they went to the Orange Bowl with Mark Richt being the head coach and Malik Rozier being the quarterback and led by an elite defense. Outside of that season, this team has not really giving me too much to root for. But this season, though, the expectations definitely are high for me. And this is the most excited that I've ever been for Miami Hurricanes football in my whole entire years rooting for this team. Because there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to contend for the ACC title. The talent is there. Nobody needs to argue, is Miami talented enough to compete for the ACC title? Because just look how well Mario Cristobal has recruited his first 2 years in South Florida. Top 10 recruiting class year 1, top 5 recruiting class second year. all he needs is to be able to maximize the talent that he has. The problem with Mario Cristobal that people have with him is that he doesn't always maximize his most talented players. But you look at how good the offensive line was at times last season. I expect the offensive line to be a really big strength this year for Mario Cristobal, even with a couple of guys departing, because he's a former offensive lineman. That's where he specializes at. You got a good group of receivers. Shannon Dawson is a really good coordinator. He's probably the second best offensive coordinator the Hurricanes have had in my lifetime watching this team since, what, Rhett Lashley? So the offense is in perfect shape. And now you got Cameron Ward, which you flipped him from the NFL draft. Don't know how you managed to pull that off. Well, we all know how they managed to pull that off. Money can do a lot of things, and it can definitely make somebody change their opinion about declaring for the draft, especially if they're not a first-round selection. Now, you got Cam Ward, and you put him with the offense that has pretty good pieces around him, especially at running back. He has a great opportunity to be part of the team that was the turnaround squad for Miami football. You know, Miami, this could be the best season that they've had since that year they went to the Orange Bowl and lost to Wisconsin, because the defense is going to be outstanding. I'm very excited for how good the defense is going to be this season. Hell, at times, like, the defense looked better than the offense. And the offense kind of put the defense at a disadvantage because Tyler Van Dyke was just so inconsistent, and it's like you get a few stops and you're right back on the field because the offense didn't do anything with it. So defensively, you could be a lot better this year than what you were last year due to more efficiency on offense and you not having to be on the field for as many plays in 2024 as you were in 2023, and Cam Ward is going to be a large part of that. And Cam Ward, there's no reason why he shouldn't work out. This easily should be the best quarterback Miami has had since those early 2000 days. Better than Brad Kaier, better than Malik Rozier, better than De'Eric King. This is the opportunity for Cameron Ward to play himself into first-round consideration in the 2025 NFL draft, and also possibly win the Heisman, because he has a good enough team around him to do that, and the success should come along with that. The ceiling for Miami this year should be nothing less of ACC championship. All right, there's not a gap between Miami, Clemson, and anybody else in this conference from a talent standpoint. If anything, it should be a tie between them and Florida State, because them being two Florida programs, being in the most talented, rich area for talent, or state for talent, you should already have a good enough team where you should be able to compete and win this conference. You know, Florida State finally got back to what they used to be last year. If they can do it, Miami should be able to do the same. And if Miami isn't able to be a conference title contender this season, I think it's a massive disappointment. I don't want to hear anything about how, well, we won 8-9 games, that's more than last year. Like, Miami should be competing for this conference. The ACC is as weak as it's ever been. There's only three teams right now with a legit shot to win it: Miami, Clemson, and Florida State, and then everybody else. And I love Jeff Braun, but there's just such a big talent advantage that Miami has as compared to the rest of this conference that there's no reason why they shouldn't roll. You know, their two hardest games this season are Florida State and Louisville. Before those two games, because you got them back-to-back, you could be 6-0, possibly maybe 5-1, because you got to play Florida week one. That game is going to be a great test to see just where this football team is at. And Florida right now, things aren't looking sunny for Billy Napier down there in Gainesville. So Mario Cristobal and Miami not only should beat Florida, but they should win that game pretty convincingly, right? And then after that, you just got all these random sorry teams. You know, you got FAMU, who you embarrass every single year. You got Ball State. You're going on the road to play the University of South Florida. You got Virginia Tech, which is an interesting game. They're a team that's on the rise, but they still got some ways to go, but they did show a little bit of promise. And then you got Cal at home. Well, on the road, excuse me. So it's not like Miami has a hard schedule. The two best teams they play are Louisville on the road and Florida State at home. And then you got to play Duke, but come on, man. Like, Miami's schedule is perfectly aligned for them to have an easy path to the ACC championship. And if they get there, they should be able to win it. Mario Cristobal's third season at Oregon, they went to the Rose Bowl. They won 12 games. They were 12-2. He's supposed to be a program builder. When you're a program builder, you're not a head coach who people are going to pile on you if you don't come out the gate your first couple of years and have success. But eventually, you get to your third, fourth year, and you get a couple of those recruiting classes on the field now. Then people start to raise their expectations for you, and that's what I'm doing this year. I have had fairly low expectations for Miami football. Yeah, I always think we can win the ACC because we should be able to always win the ACC with the talent that we have. But truly, this year is where I believe that it's conference championship or bust for the U. And there's no reason why I'm not right to have this opinion. You feel me? I shouldn't hear Miami Hurricane fans coming at me saying, oh, your expectations are too high. Like, no, this is year three. Mario Cristobal is a program builder. We know that Rome wasn't built in a day. We get that. But this is the year now where the Canes need to start winning big games again. They need to start playing in big games again. When's the last time the Hurricanes played in a Saturday night game that had big implications that everybody was drawn to the television for? It's been a while. 2024 is the year I believe the Hurricanes are going to make a big comeback in college football. You talk about some teams that could be really good stories this season. The resurgence of Miami football is going to be one of them. And the last time Miami had a great season, everybody was talking about them. College football is always better when the U is good. And this is going to be the year we see Miami football make their big return. You finally got a quarterback. You got a good enough team to compete for the conference championship. You got an easy schedule. Everything is perfectly aligned for Miami to have a resurgence this year. We were always wondering, how long was it going to take for Texas football to be back? Well, they finally were back last season. They went to the playoffs. They won the Big 12. Could Miami be that next blue blood program who's been down and out for the last decade, who finally rises back to the top of the mountain? We will see, but I believe the Miami Hurricanes are definitely going to be one of those teams that's going to be a major factor and the new expanded college football playoffs, because I'm expecting this team to make it to the ACC championship. I know I damn near say it every single year, but this year I really believe it with my soul, with my heart, that the Miami Hurricanes are going to win the ACC title. No doubt last season was a big disappointment for Lincoln Riley and the Trojans, but just because he had one down season doesn't mean he's a terrible coach. That seems to be the sentiment about Lincoln Riley now. People either say he sucks or he's overrated. Year one at USC, he won 11 games. So he has demonstrated the ability that he definitely is a good enough coach that he can have the Trojans at the top of the college football food chain, being in that playoff national championship conversation. All right, we know that he's the best offensive mind in the sport. Every single quarterback that he gets turns to gold. It doesn't matter that they lost Caleb Williams, man. They're the only school in college football. Well, he's the only coach in college football where it's rinse, wash, and repeat. You're not wondering if he's ever going to find another quarterback good enough to be a first-round pick. You're wondering who's going to be that next guy that is. You know, Lincoln Riley, with how good he is offensively, all he needs is to figure out the defense. And that's something that you can be pretty confident he finally has the answers to. And there's a lot of reasons to be excited about the future of USC football. You see, people are saying, well, it doesn't matter who Lincoln Riley hires to be his defensive coordinator because it's just a mentality thing. It's a culture thing with his program. Well, Lincoln Riley, all he's been talking about this offseason is changing his philosophy, changing how he runs his operation, changing how they practice, being more physical, putting more emphasis and more focus on the defensive side of the football. That's why he went out and got De'Anne Lynn. De'Anne Lynn was a really hot name on the coaching market when it came to defensive coordinators that a lot of big schools wanted to get. The fact that they stole them from a rival was huge, and he did God's work with UCLA's defense last year, because before he got there, that defense was a joke. In the span of 1 year, he took that defense from one of the worst in the Pac-12 to arguably the best in the Pac-12. They were great against the pass. They were one of the best teams in the nation when it came to getting pressure on the quarterback. They were 15th in points per game allowed, 12th in yards per game allowed. USC, their defense, it may not be fantastic or all world, but this definitely is going to be a better defense than what they've had in the last 2 years under Lincoln Riley. You had Alex Grinch as your defensive coordinator. It doesn't get any worse than him. He was a scrub DC. He didn't know what the hell he was doing. And Lincoln Riley, the reason why he didn't fire him sooner is because he had a lot of loyalty to Alex Grinch. Alex Grinch decided to hop on the jet and follow him to South California. You know, when he possibly could have decided to take other opportunities to stay where he was at, not have to worry about inconveniencing his family to up and move for a new job. So it's understandable why Lincoln Riley was hesitant to fire him. But, you know, if he would have fired him sooner, who knows how good USC could have been. The only thing that has held Lincoln Riley back from winning a national championship has been defense. And it seems like now, in the year 2024, Lincoln Riley has finally threw his hands up and said, you know what, okay, fine, I'm going to commit to putting more effort and time into making sure the defense side of the football is right. Look, we get that playing in the Big Ten is going to be an adjustment for USC, all right? It definitely isn't going to be anything like last year playing in the Pac-12, despite how good the Pac-12 was, because the Big Ten is a conference that's all about toughness and physicality. Two things that Lincoln Riley programs lack under him. Even when he was at Oklahoma, you didn't think of Oklahoma as a physical or tough team. You thought about them as a finesse team that was going to run around, make a lot of big plays downfield, but not a team that was going to punish you up front in the trenches. USC this year, with the new philosophy that Lincoln Riley has been talking about, they're going to bounce back. All right, now what is a bounce back season for USC? Is it 9 wins? Is it 10 wins? I'm expecting it for most people to be 10 wins. And they are going to have a really difficult schedule. All right, their first season in the Big Ten is no walk in the park. You got to play Michigan on the road, Wisconsin, Penn State, LSU to kick off the season, and then Notre Dame to end the season. So things aren't going to be easy for USC. This definitely is going to test just how good USC is and how good of a coach Lincoln Riley is. And if he doesn't do well this year, if you're USC, you might have to consider just buying them out and starting over again. You're USC, like, you have money. But I don't think it's going to come down to that. USC has a really good team. Zachariah Branch isn't being talked about enough as a Heisman candidate. You talk about somebody who could be one of the rare players to win the Heisman Trophy as a non-quarterback. He has to be in that discussion. He has Tavon Austin, the Anthony Thomas-like ability. You just get the ball in his hands and he's a threat to take it for six every single time. the defense has talent. It's not like they didn't have talent last year. The talent is there defensively. It's just you need the right coaching. And they have invested on that side of the ball heavily in the portal. So I'm not expecting for USC's defense to just lie down and be as bad as what they were last season. I know people have to thinking that it's Lincoln Riley and he just will never, ever have a good defense. But if you make the right hires and you bring in somebody like De'Anne Lynn, who was a huge upgrade from Alex Grinch, who has a NFL background because his dad, De'Antoine Lynn, I forgot what his name was, but he used to coach the Chargers, you know, so with him having an NFL background, an NFL pedigree coming from an NFL coaching pedigree, I'm pretty confident that whatever De'Anne Lynn wants to do defensively is going to work for USC this year. And it's not as if the Big Ten is this logjam and it's like the SEC. Before USC and Oregon entered this conference, it was only three teams that were worth watching: Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State. And other than that, just throw the rest of the conference away. Now, there was a time when Wisconsin used to be a little good, and they were always kicking ass in the West. But it's just, Iowa won 10 games with no damn offense, literally. How is your defense scoring more points than your offense, it feels like? So, USC, yeah, they got a tough schedule, you know, with LSU and Michigan on the road and Penn State at home in Wisconsin. It's still not like USC doesn't have a talent advantage. They still are talented. They still recruit at a pretty high level. And if they can get the defense right with how good you know they're going to be offensively, they could win the Big Ten, their first season in this thing. You know, it only just comes down to the defense. So the USC, if you're counting out Lincoln Riley because you just think that he forever is going to be a head coach who will never figure it out defensively, you're going to get proven wrong this year. Let's talk about the biggest needs for every team in the AFC North heading into free agency. For the Cincinnati Bengals, wide receiver definitely is one of your most pressing issues with free agency around the corner. Yes, you franchise T. Higgins, but we don't know what his future is in Cincy. Are you going to find a way to give him a long-term extension? Or are you going to just tag and trade him somewhere elsewhere and try to get some value where maybe you trade up in the draft so you can draft the Marvin Harrison Jr. or maybe you go and get Brock Bowers? But not only do you need to find a replacement for T. Higgins if you do get rid of him, but you still, even if you re-sign T. Higgins, still need a third wide receiver because Tyler Boyd is set to hit free agency. He's starting to decline a little bit. He's hitting that age where you start to see good players like him fall off in their game. And you're going to need to find a third option to put in the slot. Right tackle has been a huge concern for you ever since you first drafted Joe Burrow. Now, you thought that you had right tackle figured out when you signed Lyle Collins, but he was a massive whiff. Left tackle is pretty good with Orlando Brown, even though he isn't as good as what some people may think. He still is one of the better left tackles in the league. Offensive guard, you could get better there, but you know, it's not one of those things that you should overly stress out about. You got to get right tackle right. Because if you can get right tackle right, then your offensive line could possibly be a top 10 unit next year. Now, how are you going to address right tackle? Probably the draft or either free agency. So if you can trade T. Higgins and get another first-round pick for him, maybe you can get a guy like, maybe trade up for a guy like Joe Alt or Lou Fasciano if you just want to address receiver and free agency. There's a multitude of ways they can address offensive tackle. But right tackle, definitely, if they can figure that out, that offensive line could be really good with the healthy Joe Burrow. And lastly, defensive tackle. DJ Reader is set to be a free agent. He's been a big part of their run defense over the last couple of years. And last year, their run defense was the worst has ever been under Lou Anarumo. They were 26. They're going to have to find a way to improve that. And it's going to start off with, you know, either you bring back DJ Reader, or even if you do, you're going to have to get some more depth pieces behind them. Biggest needs for the Pittsburgh Steelers Definitely quarterback Kenny Pickett is not it. Don't know how many times I got to say it. There's nothing special about Kenny Pickett, bro. Like, yeah, he may play better in the fourth quarter at times in certain games, but you got to ask yourself, if you're Mike Tomlin or the general manager of the Steelers, are we going to be able to make it to a Super Bowl with Kenny Pickett? Is Kenny Pickett going to be good enough to go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow? Because you do know that the majority of the NFL's best quarterbacks are in the AFC. And I, for the life of me, don't understand why people think you can just win with anything at quarterback. It's not 2010 anymore. It's not the 1990s or the early 2000s when you can just throw a scrub at quarterback, and as long as you got a good team around them, you can still make it to a Super Bowl. If you don't have a superstar level quarterback, or at least a quarterback that can excel with a good team around them, you're not going anywhere in the playoffs. And Kenny Pickett, he doesn't have the potential of being the guy who can win you a Super Bowl, because he's never going to be able to outduel the Mahomeses or the Lamars of the world in the postseason when it matters. Okay, like, at best, he gives you top 12 quarterback play, which may be good to get you to the AFC Championship occasionally, but when you're going up against Patrick Mahomes, you got to be an all-timer. You got to be great. And not just anybody is going to take down Mahomes in the playoffs, especially not old Kenny Pickett. So you need to go out and find you a solution to the quarterback issue that you've had for the last couple of years since Big Ben hung up the cleats. And no, Russell Wilson ain't the answer neither. You need to go out, either draft a young quarterback or try to find a bridge quarterback to bring in to compete with Kenny Pickett, at least for a season that can keep you afloat, and then maybe you try to position yourself where you can trade up and get Shedeur Sanders next year, if you're not trying to lose, if you're Mike Tomlin, because this is a big year for you. You know, the ownership said that they want to win in the playoffs again, and a lot of the fan base has been feeling that same way for a while, and if Mike Tomlin wants to remain in Pittsburgh for the rest of his coaching career, he needs to get the quarterback situation situated. And Kenny Pickett ain't that. Offensive tackle. Don't know where they're going to play Broderick Jones. On some depth chart websites, he's listed as a right tackle. Some he's listed as a left tackle. But you still need to find a way to partner Broderick Jones up with somebody at that other tackle spot, wherever he's going to line up at. Now in the draft, there are a lot of great first-round caliber offensive tackles. You're picking up 20, so you definitely are in position to get one of them. And then, you know, if you don't want to take that route, there are going to be a couple of decent ones available in free agency. If you're putting Broderick Jones at left tackle and you're looking for a right tackle, it's a lot easier to find a good right tackle than it is to find a good left tackle. Cornerback. You also could argue for linebacker being up here, but they need them both. But they need cornerback more, because other than Joey Porter Jr., there was nobody in the secondary who you could depend on. And I don't even know how this defense was as good as what they were at times. Well, TJ Watt and how good the pass rush was. But if the pass rush got neutralized, it was grits cheese for the Steelers defense, man. It's like the secondary couldn't stop nobody. The linebackers couldn't stop nobody. It's like, what could you do? You feel me? It's like you had old man Patrick Peterson out there. You know, like you got James Pierre, who is a quality backup. You know, he comes from FAU. Shout out to the Owls. You know, always got to support my Owl brethren. But we need some help at corner, some big help at corner. So biggest needs for the Pittsburgh Steelers, quarterback. My guy, TFT underscore guy in the comment section says Purdy is a prime example of throw any scrub on a great team. And Brock Purdy's not a scrub. Brock Purdy's better than Dak Prescott and a lot of other quarterbacks. We need to give Brock Purdy a little bit more respect. I would take Brock Purdy over a heartbeat over Kenny Pickett or Mason Rudolph. The Cleveland Browns, what are their biggest team needs? Well, you need to get another pass rusher to pair alongside of Myles Garrett, because Za'Darius Smith is going to hit the open market. And when it comes to your cap situation, you got a little bit of money, but maybe not enough to retain a guy like Za'Darius Smith if he ends up having a competitive market and you get into somewhat of a bidding war for him. And you also need more depth at edge rusher and on the interior of your defensive line because you have several depth departures that are going to be out of the door. And not only that, but you could potentially improve your defensive line if you could find a good interior D tackle that's really good at getting after the quarterback. Now, he doesn't have to be Aaron Donald or anything like that, but if you can find you a defensive tackle that can give you 5, maybe 6 sacks from that position that could really push the pocket and make things hard on opposing quarterbacks when they pass, that would be a plus for you. And also, it wouldn't hurt you finding a great defensive tackle anyway, because when you have that capable with a Myles Garrett, do you not know how unstoppable your D-line could be? Not just getting after the quarterback, but stopping the run also? So, edge rusher, D-tackle, two huge needs for the Cleveland Browns. Linebacker, Anthony Walker, Sione Takitaki are free agents. And neither one of those guys are worth bringing back. You definitely can find some more serviceable starters than those two. Even though they weren't terrible, it's just if you can do better, you do better. You can find a pretty good linebacker in the draft. Not a lot of people are talking about this linebacker class. I think the linebackers that we got, like Tommy Eichenberg out of Ohio State, would be a very good fit for the defense that Jim Schwartz likes to run. So there are tons of really good linebackers in the draft that the Browns could get. You also could sign a guy like Devin White in free agency. He also would be a perfect fit in Jim Schwartz's defense, and you won't have to pay that much for him because he's going to be looking to get a big deal, so you could give him a one-year prove-it deal. So these are the three biggest needs for the Browns. Lastly, we got the Baltimore Ravens. It took me a while to do this one because they're one of the most complete teams in the NFL. There's not any position that you can look at and say, oh, yeah, like that's a glaring issue outside of edge rusher because you are losing Jadeveon Clowney and Calvin Noy to free agency. They're older. If you can get a younger, more talented guy than those, then there's no reason to bring them back. And plus, it's like you got Odafe Owe, David Ojabo, young players who you had a lot of faith in when you first drafted them, and they haven't really developed how you would hope. Are you going to give them another year to try to figure it out and give them more reps, or are you just going to try and bring in some more competition and just try to improve that position overall and don't try to gamble on maybe you can hit on David Ojabo or Odafe Owe figuring out? So you could go free agency route. In the draft, there's a lot of talented pass rushers in this draft. It's like, if you need offensive tackles or pass rushers, this is the perfect draft for that. Cornerback. Cornerback isn't a pressing issue for Baltimore, but it definitely is a position that they definitely could sharpen up a little bit more. You know, like, they got Brandon Stevens. Like, he's pretty solid, but you could get another slot corner. Depending on, you know, what you want to do with Geno Stone. Are you going to bring him back? Or are you going to let him hit the open market? What are you going to do with him? And then they have some younger guys like Jalen Armour Davis, who they drafted out of Bama. But those are middle round picks that you're banking on them developing and being able to put that athleticism with some good play on the field. But most of the times when you're banking on those athletic mid-round corners to hit, they're more hit or miss. So it probably would make a lot of sense for Baltimore to try to find another quality corner. They don't need like an elite corner, but just somebody who could be a solid backup if a guy goes down, or he could be a decent slot corner. And then running back. I didn't know that J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, and Dalvin Cook were all free agents. And there's no reason to bring any of them back when you're going to have the opportunity to pick any of the top running backs available in the open market. You could get Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley potentially, Derrick Henry, who reportedly you attempted to trade for at the trade deadline this year. So the Baltimore Ravens, with the backfield of Lamar, Saquon or Josh Jacobs or Derrick Henry, that's scary. So these are my three biggest team needs for every AFC North team. Comment some team needs of any of these teams that I might have missed, or you know, some other teams that you guys want me to do, some other divisions you guys want me to break down and do team needs for. The Miami Dolphins and Tua Tagovailoa right now are at the discussion table for a long-term deal. And I believe the Dolphins are going to be making a huge mistake giving Tua Tagovailoa an extension, especially if they plan on making him one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. And my problem with Tua getting an extension has nothing to do with how good he is as a quarterback fully to a certain extent. All right, Tua is a really good quarterback, but a really good quarterback shouldn't be getting paid like a Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. It's levels to this shit. If you're an elite quarterback, you deserve to be paid as much as Patrick Mahomes. But Tua Tagovailoa getting more than Patrick Mahomes or making as much as a guy like him just doesn't sound right. And it's just not a smart financial investment. Hell, there are guys like Matthew Stafford who are making $40 million a year. And you're really going to give Tua Tagovailoa, somebody who doesn't play well in big games and looks soft in big moments, $45 million a year? A $200 million contract? Like, that would be an awful decision, especially investing in somebody who has an extensive history of not being available. This just is one of those situations where the Miami Dolphins would be better off if they just move on from Tua. Move on from Tua, yes. The Miami Dolphins should just trade Tua. Trade Tua to the Washington Commanders, try to get that third overall selection, try to see whatever you could do to add on to trading Tua to make the Commanders want to take that trade, and then you take that number two pick and you draft either Drake May or Jaden Daniels. You need to try to get a quarterback that has the potential to go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes. You see, the problem with a lot of teams in the NFL, like the Miami Dolphins or the Dallas Cowboys, is that when they get a good quarterback, they get stuck with just having a good quarterback. And when you have just a good quarterback, yeah, you can win with that. You can make it to the postseason with that. But you're not going to be able to make a deep playoff run with the quarterback that's just good enough. Tua is only as good as the team that you put around them. And then even then, when you get into the fourth quarter of these playoff games, Tua just doesn't show up. He looks really timid. If you watch Hard Knocks this year and you listen to the interactions between him and Mike McDaniel, Mike McDaniel has to try to not say anything that could ruin Tua's confidence, because he's one of those players that he gets easily rattled. And if things start off slow early, he's not going to have a good game. And that's not franchise quarterback material to me. If I'm going to pay you $45 million, I need you to be able to step up in the fourth quarter. I need you to play the same way you did when you dropped 70 on the Denver Broncos against any other good teams that we play. You know, like against the Buffalo Bills. He got owned by Josh Allen in both occasions. He was the worst quarterback on the field. You're in division with a top three QB right now. You're in the conference with the majority of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and you really think a guy like Tua is going to be good enough to get you a Super Bowl? Like, stop the shit. Like, your goal shouldn't be trying to find a quarterback that's good enough. Every team should be trying to get a superstar quarterback. And if you don't have that, you should always be looking to try to find the opportunity to get one. Tua is not going to win you a Super Bowl. You can put all the players you want around Tua. It's not going to change the fact that from a mentality standpoint, he just doesn't have that it factor. He doesn't have that switch that he can flip in his brain where all of a sudden the game's on the line. He's about to win you the football game. He's the reason why guys like Patrick Mahomes continue to cakewalk through the AFC. Because guys like Tua just don't have what it takes to win in the playoffs. He's not a championship quarterback. he is more closer to Alex Smith than he is close to being anywhere close to what Drew Brees was. People say he's like a worser version of Drew Brees. Like, no, he's more closer to Alex Smith than Drew Brees. Like, Tua is not an elite quarterback. He's a good quarterback. You can make it to the playoffs with that, but you're not going to win a Lombardi trophy with somebody who doesn't show up in the fourth quarter. The reason why Patrick Mahomes beat Lamar and Josh Allen and Tua and surprised everybody during this playoff run was because in the fourth quarter, Mahomes was at his best, and the other quarterbacks that he was up against were at their worst. Lamar Jackson just fell apart in the fourth quarter. Josh Allen, the last 6 minutes of the game, he fell apart. And Tua, he didn't even bother to show up. He was scared of the moment. I believe the reason why Miami Dolphins fans defend Tua so much is because they can't get over the fact that they drafted this dude over Justin Herbert, who's just better in every area. He's one of the top five most talented quarterbacks in the league right now. Yet, you got a quarterback that's extremely limited. You got to design a specific scheme around him. You got to have specific players with the specific skill set around them. It's just that, why settle for good when you could go after great? Trade Tua, get Drake May, get Jaden Daniels, get you a quarterback that has that superstar potential. Well, JT, they're unproven. Like, with Tua, you know what you get. Listen, you got to take risk. You got to take swings if you want to win in the NFL. Drafting Patrick Mahomes was a big risk that paid off for Kansas City. But you just can't use the fact that you're scared to take that risk as the reason to justify why you should handicap yourself for 5 to 7 years to a quarterback that's only good enough to get you to the playoffs, and then you get bounced right out. You're not going to win anything with Tua. Now, if you just want to be okay with, you know, going to the playoffs and not doing anything every single season and having a guy that's going to put up great numbers in the regular season, cool. Cool, like, re-sign Tua. It makes sense. But if you're trying to win a Super Bowl, it makes tons of sense to trade this dude, especially when his value is really high since he was fairly healthy last season. But it's just, if I'm going to give a quarterback $45 million, if I'm going to give Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow kind of money to a quarterback, you better be just as good as them. And for Tua, he just isn't in that group. He's not an elite quarterback. If I'm going to break the bank to pay a quarterback, I'm going to pay the best one. I'm going to pay somebody who's elite, somebody who's generational, and that's not Tua. Therefore, until I find that, I'm going to continue to look at where my options are. I'm going to continue to always try to find a better quarterback. Even if I give to a 2-3 year extension, that's what I would give him because I still want to try to find a replacement. But the most I would give to a is $38 million. I think that's fair. Paying him $35, $38 million a year is a good contract for a guy of his level. He's a really good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback. He still is a top 10 quarterback. Not trying to say the dude is shit, but in terms of being a capable quarterback to lead you to the championship, to lead you in the fourth quarter on a 2-minute drive to win the game. He's not that dude. He just isn't it. He just looks scared of the big moment. Miami Dolphins fans, like, say what you want to, bro. Like, I've been right about you guys the last three off seasons. Tua just isn't it. I don't need to keep giving him better receivers. You improve the offensive line, that definitely will help him out. But, I mean, what's the use of having a great team if just from a mental standpoint, he just doesn't have it? He just isn't clutch. There's nothing special about Tua. He's just a really good game manager that goes out and he executes the offense. But what does he add to the offense? What does he bring that makes him different? Nothing. wow, he's really accurate. Oh, he has great anticipation. Cool. Doesn't every great quarterback in the NFL have great accuracy and anticipation? Isn't that part of being a quarterback? Throwing the football to the wide receivers accurately? It's like there's nothing special about Tua. He's just a good quarterback that executes the offense. He's not a QB that goes out and wins you the game. And that's why the Dolphins should trade Tua Tagovailoa. And I think it's a fairly well-explained explanation, in my opinion. But I already know you guys don't care. Like, you guys are going to be okay with mediocrity. You're going to be okay with, well, I won't say mediocrity. You're going to be okay with good enough. Good enough doesn't win you a Super Bowl. You know, Brock Purdy is better than Tua. Brock Purdy, at least he was able to clap back at Patrick Mahomes when the Chiefs were making their runs. It's not like Brock Purdy didn't do anything. Brock Purdy was good in big moments throughout the 49ers playoff run this year. Tua didn't do shit. Hell, Skylar Thompson did more than what Tua did against the Chiefs. You know, even though they played against the Bills and the defense did most of the work, it's just Tua just isn't a great big game quarterback. He's forever going to be a solid quarterback. Maybe later on in his career, he'll be like Kirk Cousins and he'll get better, but he's not a big game quarterback. And there's a reason why Brian Flores and company knew they made a mistake when they drafted this dude. He shouldn't be getting extended. If anything, instead of trying to extend Tua, the Miami Dolphins should be trying to trade Tua. Because if you don't have a quarterback like a Lamar Jackson or a Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or anybody that has elite superstar skill set, you're not going to be able to win a Super Bowl. All you're going to go is to the playoffs, lose in the wild card round, and that's going to be all she wrote, because you're always going to have a guy like Tua that just can't outplay any of the elite quarterbacks when it matters. And in the NFL, you shouldn't be satisfied with good enough or having stable quarterback play. You should be trying to find a quarterback who can help you go toe-to-toe with Mahomes. If you don't have an elite quarterback, you still have an issue at quarterback. You see, Tua is good enough where you're not always going to be looking to replace him, but if the opportunity comes when you can replace him, you do it. Because the upside with a Jaden Daniels or Drake May or Caleb Williams is so much higher than the upside that you have with Tua. Tua has already reached his ceiling. His ceiling is what he is now. A good game manager that executes the offense. He'll get you to the playoffs. He'll look good in the regular season. He'll put up great numbers. And then he won't do shit when it matters. It seems like a lot of people have already closed the door on Bryce Young's career. Now, last season was a really big disappointment for Bryce Young. All right, when you get drafted number one overall, it doesn't matter how shitty your team is. You still have to be able to overcome certain limitations, certain obstacles. And Bryce Young obviously isn't that kind of quarterback that's going to be able to overcome or elevate a team that isn't fully complete. You know, he needs to have good receivers around him and a good offensive line and great coaching. And that's most quarterbacks. But the elite quarterbacks can make the guys around them look better. They can make the guys calling the plays look better than what they actually are. And that's why when people say the Panthers made the mistake of drafting Bryce Young over C.J. Stroud, I still disagree with it, because I still believe C.J. Stroud wouldn't be as good as what he was with Houston and Carolina. But he still would have been better than what Bryce Young was last season for Carolina. But that's not to say Bryce Young hasn't had his moments. Nobody ever talks about how he outplayed C.J. Stroud when the Panthers beat the Texans. As a matter of fact, I never hear nobody talk about that at all. Hell, when it happened, I was the only one who seemed to care about it. Outside of Panthers fans and Texans fans, like, Bryce Young, the dude who everybody says was the wrong pick at number one, outplayed C.J. Stroud, and nobody talked about it. And the Panthers won the game against the Green Bay Packers. He showed a lot of flashes of what he could be when he has a decent situation around him, or when he gets time to throw the football and guys are getting open. Bryce Young can still become one of the best quarterbacks in the league. people make it seem like his size was such a big problem that it was just so blatantly obvious he wasn't going to work out. Sean Payton went on Colin Coward's show, The Herd, on FS1 before you took the Broncos job and said that if you get a prospect that may not meet specific position minimums, but he walks on water as a prospect, he's a unicorn, he just plays the game a lot differently, you draft that. And Sean Payton would have taken Bryce Young number one overall if he had the opportunity to potentially. You know, everybody was really high on Bryce Young. People think just because he was coming from Alabama, like he was carried by great talent. Alabama was carried by Bryce Young the 2 years he was a starter. That's why Nick Saban, after Bryce Young left for the NFL, had an entirely new coaching staff. He said they were too Bryce Young dependent. You see, every quarterback needs to have something around them to be successful, even if they are expected to overcome certain limitations. That's what you're supposed to do if you're a number one pick. That's why you got taken number one overall, because you're a franchise-changing quarterback. You can change the future and fortunes of a franchise even if they don't have everything that you need to be successful. You can overcome something. Joe Burrow took the Bengals to the Super Bowl with one of the worst offensive lines in the Super Bowl era. But he had great receivers. You see, he was able to win because he had great receivers, but he was also able to win overcoming a trash offensive line. There aren't too many quarterbacks that would have been able to do what Joe Burrow has been able to do. Patrick Mahomes was able to overcome and win another Super Bowl, not having that good of a team, not having that good of a supporting cast. When you are a first-round draft pick, you are expected to be able to overcome not ideal situations. We get that. But you can't expect a guy like Bryce Young, who's small, we don't really know just what his true size is, to overcome size and then his own team. His best receiver was old-ass Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen is 30-something years old. He had a really fine season, especially for fantasy football owners. But anytime your best receiver is 30-something years old, that tells you your wide receiver room sucks. And the Carolina Panthers had one of the worst receiving groups in all of the NFL at creating separation. Who was Bryce Young supposed to throw the football to when nobody was getting open? Nobody was creating separation. Dave Canales, now that he is the head coach of Carolina, he's going to be able to put Bryce Young in a quarterback-friendly system that's going to do the same for him as Sean McVay did for Jared Goff when he got hired by the Rams. Remember when Sean McVay first got hired by the Rams? Everybody was wondering, could he save Jared Goff? Because Jared Goff went number one under Jeff Fisher, and he was atrocious as a rookie. And everybody thought the dude just was a lost cause. He just couldn't play. And then you get Sean McVay in there, and Jared Goff is cooking with oil. Looks like an MVP candidate, leads him to the Super Bowl, and he got traded, but it's not like the dude was terrible. Bryce Young could have a similar story. And yeah, he may be undersized, but there are things that made Bryce Young special and why he got taken number one overall. The fact that he had really good pocket presence coming out of Alabama, despite being small, doesn't have that anymore. You know, the offensive line didn't play good. Receivers weren't getting open. Of course, when you don't have time to throw the football, it's like you're not going to be that comfortable in the pocket. You're going to have to get out and make things happen. And he's not that good of an athlete, but athleticism was never really a big selling point for Bryce Young. He just is a really good instinctual football player. People seem to miss all of the traits that made Bryce Young special. He wasn't great because he was a fantastic athlete for his size. He was great despite his lack of size because he just is a great instinctual football player. He just has a good feel for the game. He has a good understanding of what defenses are trying to do and making the right adjustments in game. And we didn't really see that last year because the coaching staff just handicapped him. But now, with Dave Canales, somebody who was in Seattle for over a decade on that staff, working with Russell Wilson, played a major part in the resurgence of Geno Smith's career, did the same thing this past year with Baker Mayfield down there in Tampa Bay, if you can resurrect the careers of Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield, you mean to tell me that Bryce Young isn't in good hands? I mean, even if this thing is a failure and it crashes and burns, Bryce Young should at least be a mid-tier starting quarterback. But Bryce Young still has all of the capability to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. There's a reason why so many people wanted him on their team. You know, the Texans ideally wanted to tank for Bryce Young, and they didn't. They wanted that number one pick because that's who they were going to draft. But they took C.J. Stroud instead. And sometimes, you know, getting your best option ends up being the best choice. But Bryce Young, with his accuracy, his anticipation, you know, the fact that he's able to just have a good feel of the game, his instincts, it's what separated him. And Dave Canales, if he ends up putting Bryce Young in the right situation, he's going to get the most out of Bryce Young, and everybody's going to find out why Bryce Young got drafted despite the obvious concerns about his size. Like, everybody knows Bryce Young was small and he was built like a preschooler when he was coming out of Bama. But nobody cared that much because we knew just how good of a football player he was. You don't win Gatorade Player of the Year playing at a school like Mater Dei and you're just terrible and you got by not having something special about you. You know, people just make it seem like Bryce Young is lacking talent. Like, this dude is just a good instinctual football player. And Dave Canales is really going to show everybody why this Panthers job was a lot better than what people think. Because if you can get Bryce Young playing at the level that many people expected him to play at when he got drafted, then everything changes for Carolina. All of a sudden, they got the opportunity to win a Super Bowl. Because when you got an elite quarterback, especially in a conference like the NFC where there really aren't any truly elite quarterbacks, you get one that improves your odds. And if he becomes elite, he easily becomes the best quarterback in the division. So Dave Canales, with what he has done with Baker Mayfield and Geno Smith, he could do to Bryce Young similarly what Sean McVay did for Jared Goff with the Rams. There's still a lot of reasons to be optimistic about the future of Bryce Young. When Trevor Lawrence had that down rookie season under Urban Meyer, year two, he had a big sophomore year. Why? Because they got Doug Peterson. He got better coaching. He had better weapons around him. Now, you still have to be able to overcome some limitations, which Trevor Lawrence was able to do to some degree. Bryce Young may not be able to be one of those quarterbacks that can overcome not having everything. He may just need to have a talented team around him to always be able to win. But if he's an elite player when he has that, then he's still a pretty good pick. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I appreciate you guys for tuning in for this late night episode of JT Sports Live. Remember to give us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify if you enjoy. Like, subscribe to the channel. DM us any questions that you would like answered on a future episode. You can find us on Instagram at @JTSports_, X at @JTSports_. And this is it for this episode. I'll see you guys Monday or Tuesday with another episode of the JT Sports Podcast.